Hello, politicos, and welcome to another episode of The Trill, a podcast by The Trillium. My name is Aiden Shamandy. I'm a reporter here at The Trillium.
And I'm editor-in-chief, Jessica Smith-Cross.
And I'm Mara Stiles, leader of the NDP and the official opposition in Ontario.
And the MPP for Davenport, my longtime MPP.
That is true. I am the MPP, proudly, of the great riding of Davenport.
So I will try to not make this a Davenport-exclusive podcast. But we do want to start with some softballs, butter you up a little bit. It's early, it's sunny. So I know it hasn't gotten a lot of play in Queen's Park circles, but normal cool people have been, you know, totally consumed by the Drake and Kendrick beef. Have you been keeping up?
I actually have. I will thank executive assistant, Jad El-Tal, for keeping me up to date on the latest. Absolutely. We were on the road in Sudbury and I got the full briefing. Yeah.
Have you listened to all the songs?
I have actually listened to some excerpts and I have seen some of the lyrics.
I think we'll probably leave it there. I don't know if it's PG to keep going down that road.
Yeah.
Okay. One more really difficult question before we start. What did you want to be when you were a kid?
Oh, I wanted to be a writer. So see, you guys became what I wanted to ultimately be.
Same. I just thought it would be the next great novel.
That's true. I definitely did want to do. I wanted to write fiction. No question.
I wanted to be a hockey player. Surprise, surprise. White boy growing up in Toronto. So I pitched this to your people as like a year since Mart became leader. But, you know, it's obviously been a bit more than a year. I checked 460 days. So happy 460th day. Yeah. And want to start the interview kind of chronologically with the lack of a leadership race and maybe how that kind of affected your early days and your tenure since. You know, leadership races bring in all this attention, all this money. The Liberals got a ton during theirs. What do you think you've lacked by not having one?
I think that absolutely, you know, the opportunity to debate issues, put policy proposals out there. We did get some of that out, but not as much as we would have, I think, if there'd been a full race. I do think the other issue probably is just because it kind of ended quite suddenly, is it's like, go, go, go. Okay, now we have to set up an office. We have to get the team ready. And so basically I took the leadership a little earlier than I expected to. And, but I have to say, I have felt a lot of support throughout this. I think people were excited and we still out fundraise the Liberals by a long shot.
The media, for what it's worth, paid a lot of attention to the contested Liberal leadership race and still continues to pay a lot of attention to Bonnie Crombie. And I'm honestly curious to know if you think you're sort of getting disrespected by our kind, that we sort of treat them like the official opposition at
times. I think there's always, especially with a race like that, there's always going to be a little more attention paid, and with the new kid on the block, right? Which in a sense she is, as the new leader. So I expect that. We all anticipate that. I'm a little surprised that it hasn't maintained as long as you would have expected, actually. And at the end of the day, as I said, you know, throughout the whole thing, for me, it really is about taking on the government. And I think our challenges, the path she's on versus what we are on here in the NDP caucus, are very different. I think they are looking to try to regain party status and rebuild their party. And for us, we are building on the ground and in the air to form government in the next election. And we have a great opportunity to do that. And I think people expect us to. And we also have, you know, far more opportunities, frankly, to put forward the kinds of practical solutions that I think people in Ontario need to hear about.
Do you have a plan to sort of, that you can let us in on, of course, to sort of kill the Liberals in that progressive primary kind of thing?
You know, I've watched Doug battle it out with Bonnie over who has the fanciest car or, you know, the nicest cottage or whatever. And I think they can go there. For me, we really are focused on the conservatives, on the government, on challenging them. You know, they're the ones who have, I think, dragged Ontario down, and the Liberals before them, frankly, to the point that we're at right now, where so many people are struggling day to day, the state of our healthcare system, the lack of affordable housing. So for us, I mean, my eye is on how we build and provide a real practical alternative to the conservatives going into the next election.
So I'm curious if you think you're going to have a tougher election in 2026 compared to 2018 or 2022, because presumably the Liberals will do a little bit better than 8 seats.
Well, we'll see. I don't know. But, you know, I think it'll be a very different election for me, certainly, as the leader. I haven't been a leader in the election yet in a campaign. I feel very ready for that. I think that in many respects, the 2018 election, I think, was very tight, actually. And I'm hoping that in this next election, but look, at the end of the day, every single election campaign is different. And you can't repeat the same election that you ran in 2018 or 2022. It's going to be different. I think that that Doug Ford was able to surf a little in 2022 based on, you know, the pandemic and people recovering. And a lot of people really disengaged too. And that was concerning to me. I think now going into the next election, he'll have had 8 years. And even now at 6 years, what I ask people is your life any better today than it was 6 years ago? And it's worse for everyone. Everyone is struggling. And that's going to be on Doug Ford. And he's going to have to account for that in 2026. He had an opportunity to make change, to do things better, to address housing and healthcare issues and the affordability crisis. And he's failing. So unless he really starts to listen to what Ontarians are saying and turn things around, I think people are going to be looking for a fresh real change. Going to the next election.
I noticed you didn't mention the Greenbelt there when listing off his perceived failures. Do you think that'll be as big of an issue in 26 as it is now?
I think that's actually a crucial election issue. And I will say this, I do think there is a little bit of corruption fatigue right now. I think, you know, I find it, you probably do too. You get out there and people have heard so much about the corruption of this government. There's some new scandal almost every day that they almost can't bear it. They can't, it's overwhelming. But I think at the end of the day, when you get to election day in June 2026, it's going to be this government's failure to meet the needs of Ontarians and where their priorities are. And the fact that they prioritized making a few of their friends and insiders really rich on the backs of Ontarians and the expense of things like our Greenbelt, I think they're going to be held accountable for that.
So in one of your early answers, you talked about how you assumed the leadership a little bit early. I believe you were supposed to take over in March. You took over in February.
Yes.
Something like that.
Yes.
Yeah. And in early April, you had to kick Mike Mantha out of your caucus. And I guess not a few, but several months after that, the Sarah Jama episode happened. So in your first year, you've had an absolute kind of trial by fire in caucus mm-hmm. management. Like a lot of the times, leaders don't really have to kick anyone out. And you had to do it twice in like 7 or 8 months. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if you could talk a bit about some of those early challenges and how that's kind of shaped your approach to leadership of both the party broadly, but also caucus specifically.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, sure. I mean, obviously, no leader wants to have to be put in that situation. And it's been difficult. I won't lie. Like, it's difficult for me personally. It's difficult for our caucus. But I think, you know, the challenges we're facing really as a party are a little different. Like I'll put it this way. What I want to focus on and what we need to focus on is positive solutions. Our people in this province are tired of the negative, right? They're tired of the negative. The opposition can't just say no to everything. I think that is something that people are tired of. So for me, I've tried to use this year as an opportunity to put forward positive solutions. So we've had, you know, some things that we had to do that were unpleasant, frankly. No leader ever wants to have to be faced with that. But I do think that it has left our party in many respects, and certainly our caucus, more united than ever before. And you know, eager to put forward those positive ideas, you know, to turn the tide a little bit on negativity and start to think about the things that we could do to change people's lives for the better.
You know, when the Sarah Jama thing happened, those of us inside the building who get to see how political parties operate every day had a pretty clear understanding of why you decided to let her go from the party. Mm-hmm. The things that she did on her own, we don't think are tolerated by other political parties. To the people inside the building, it seemed like no surprise to hear that she was being removed, and we understood what had happened. I don't think that is translated very well outside of the building, people who don't spend their lives immersed in this stuff and understanding it. How are you finding people? Do you get any credit for anything you've done since in supporting and being supportive of her in your efforts on the Kefia ban? All this, is it just lost for some of their supporters out there?
No, I mean, look, it's a lot of conversations, right? I mean, that's like part of my job. I mean, what do you do as a politician? It's conversations with people. It's listening. And there is learning too, right? But I think that with those careful conversations and also maintaining a really strong and clear position on issues that matter to a lot of people, like the Kefia ban, you know, it is really important in ensuring we have that trust, that people understand where we sit on these issues. You know, the Kefia ban is a civil liberties issue, as we see it. Our caucus is united on that. And, you know, I will stand up for MPP Jama's right to wear the keffiyeh in the legislature, in the chamber, absolutely, every day. And I think that, you know, just for me, it was always a matter of just staying focused on doing what is right, staying true to our values, and that will come through.
Do either Sarah Jama or Mike Amantha have a path back to the party?
I mean, I at this point, we're not talking about that. We are working really hard on the issues that matter to us, and where there's opportunities to work together, we absolutely will, right? Yeah.
BC, NDP government, Manitoba, new NDP government. What do you think they did well to win government that you think the ONDP should emulate, and are there any things that they did that you don't think would translate to Ontario politics?
Oh, that's interesting. Well, first of all, yeah, awesome. Two strong NDP governments out there in the West, where we have made government many times. So when people say to you, "As you know, well, the NDP, you know, they have no experience in government," I say, "Excuse me, we have a very long and strong record of also, I will say, like very fiscally responsible governments in Western Ontario." Ontario, Western Canada. But look, BC, first of all, I've met with the premier, and I know both of these premiers, of course. We are working really closely with them. We understand, our teams work closely together to look at both what they did to win and how they ran their campaigns and how they positioned themselves, but also, you know, how they are actually following through on their promises and commitments as government. I think that what I would say just generally is that it's that clear, positive message that really connected with people. I think if you look at Wab Kanu, for example, Premier Kanu, great person. He stuck very clearly to issues that are really connected with people in Manitoba, right? Healthcare, affordability. These were his big focuses, and he was absolutely laser focused on those things. And I think it worked really well because it connected with many, many people. I mean, and I think that's very similar to what we're experiencing here in Ontario. In BC, of course, they were working to, you know, they've been very successful there. And they're continuing to actually follow through on their commitments and doing a great job of it. So this is why I always remind the government here that they could do better. You know, they could actually achieve what we're achieving in BC under the NDP government when it comes to housing starts. It's an interesting contrast, you know, a healthcare system that's actually starting to really become stronger, housing that's being built, fewer people losing their homes. These are critical pieces, and we could be doing the same thing here.
Changing gears a little bit, Andrea Horvath was from Hamilton and really played into that Steeltown identity, like, you know, Steeltown Scrapper. That's just a great nickname.
Yeah.
I know you're from Newfoundland, but you do represent a downtown Toronto riding, you know, shout out Davenport. But, you know, the Tories love to say how out of touch everyone from Toronto is, how they're, you know, kind of pie in the sky lefties. Do you think that hurts you at all? How do you counter that?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think that they're wrong about that. I mean, I think that people who live in ridings like my own, you know, there's lots of working class people struggling with the same issues that people struggle with everywhere. And the other thing I would say is that the issues that there are many issues that are very consistent across the province now. You know, there was a time when I first came here from Newfoundland in, you know, 30 years ago, and started working here in Toronto. in Northern Ontario, where I was doing a lot of my work, actually, there were, you know, you couldn't find a family doctor. They were already struggling for those things, right? Now that's a reality everywhere. So I think there's a little more understanding and overlap in the issues than maybe there has been in the past. But having said that, I think that is one of the things that I bring that is unique and frankly different than my counterparts. I come from a place which relied on the resource sector. I grew up in a very isolated place. I understand and I do think I connect with communities, both just rural and also northern, in a way that I don't think my counterpart leaders can. I get it. I've lived it and I understand and I value the industries and not just the money they make for the province, but the people who work in them, in mining and forestry, the farmers. And you know, I got to say, the more I travel around, it's becoming more and more clear to me too, that this government takes all those people for granted. Boy, do they. I mean, look at what they're doing to farmers in this province. And people, you know, they may still vote for them. They've been conservative, probably many of them all their lives. But what I'm hearing on the ground is that is breaking. And so I think my ability to connect around those issues growing up on a small family farm, it really does matter to a lot of people.
Just so listeners are aware, I said shout out Davenport because I am from Davenport.
Yes, you are.
We were talking about that in the pre-show and I realized that will not translate on the recording. So
Affordability.
Gotta yeah.
Talk about it.
Yeah. So affordability is obviously the biggest issue right now. And one thing that I always kind of wonder about talking to folks on the left is the extent to which left-leaning parties struggle to connect with regular folks on the issue. Because I think, you know, for Ford and the Tories, the central message is cutting taxes. Mm-hmm. This is something that a voter would see at the point of sale, at the gas pump. You know, it's constantly reinforced. For the left, I find it's, you know, a bit more of a programmatic approach, like let's make this new program or beef up this existing program using taxpayer dollars, and here's how it will ultimately benefit you. It doesn't kind of have that same reinforcing effect. Do you see this as a problem? Do you agree with me at all? Because it seems like a more kind of complicated message to get across.
I do think that, you know, the conservatives, their, you know, axe the tax message, which they've poured, let's be clear, like it's not like this just magically works. It works because they pour millions and millions and millions of dollars into it, both federally and provincially. And that's why it connects. But it is a simple message, right? An easy one to understand. I think the truth is that, you know, people are hurting. Working people are hurting. Life has become less affordable and in many respects. So I think there are ways that I hear what you're saying. Sometimes what we talk about can sound a bit too complicated, maybe. It doesn't connect as instantly. But I think that, again, it is our challenge and our opportunity to connect right where people are at in a similar way. I think we are our conversation about, like we talk about when it comes to fixing the physician shortage, is straightforward and simple. You know, take away the administrative burden, right? Put more nurses out there. When we talk about, you know, food affordability, we say support farmers. Crack down on corporations that are putting profits ahead of their people. I think those messages are pretty straightforward. I think the conservatives learned it from us, by the way. Many of the same messages they're using now, they took right out of the NDP CCF playbook. But I hear what you're saying. I think the problem is that I'm not so sure how long people are going to buy that for. I mean, Doug Ford, we all know that we wouldn't have the carbon tax in Ontario if he hadn't done away with cap and trade. I think at a certain point, after 8 years of this government, people are going to have no patience for that kind of ridiculous, you know, license plate sticker crap. You know, they're going to be looking for actual answers and solutions and a party that provides them with some real hope, contrasted with a party that just seems to be serving the interests of very few.
And what about other big swings on affordability from the left? Like a while ago, you guys held these hearings on a public telco, and we really haven't heard much on that since. Like what are the big plans? You know, the government always says you're a party of no. What are you saying yes to?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a really good example, the telco stuff that Tom Rakosevic has been really leading the way on. I think We're still working on what some of the solutions are. Like, you know, I don't want to throw things out there that are just, they just sound good, but they don't actually have any meat on the bones. I think we've got to look at that. We've got to look at insurance, and particularly auto insurance again, because these are where the things that are really, you know, making people's lives very difficult. We have to talk about, and here's another thing I would say, you know, we've been all talking about building housing, which is absolutely essential, building truly affordable housing. That plan we have to get the government back in that business again is really resonating a lot out there, I find, because people see that it's not happening. So there's got to be another way. But I think the other piece of that is we have to not forget that people can't lose the homes they currently have. And that's a piece of what the government like just refuses to talk about. It's not just getting people into new homes. It's actually keeping the roof over your head. So I think if we frame it differently, it's good. We've got a lot of interesting ideas that we've been working on and debating in our caucus. And I think we're going to be in a position to continue to roll out new solutions over the next couple of years.
I know you've got a couple of years before the next general election to get all that stuff worked out. In the meantime, by-elections haven't been so kind to your party. I imagine the loss in Kitchener Centre was probably particularly bad. So what do you think is going on?
Yeah, I mean, like, first of all, I think that the one that for sure, you know, hurts more is Kitchener Centre because we held that riding. But in other by-elections, these haven't really been ridings that were where we've held them in many, many, many years. So our emphasis in those ridings has 100% been to build the capacity on the ground. And that is what we are seeing. It's we're trying new things. We're seeing what connects. And then we're going back afterwards and we're saying, okay, that didn't work. What can we do better? How can we try this differently? We know that going into the next election, we have to win in places where we've never won before. And so every single opportunity we have, yeah, sure, it's an opportunity to win a seat, of course, like we want to win. But it's also an opportunity for us to grow our support and our volunteer base in those communities where sometimes we haven't had much in a long time, to identify excellent potential candidates, to try new messages, and to connect. And so when we don't do as well as we want to, we're back at it, we're digging in, we're analyzing everything, and we're going to continue to work to try to build and prepare so that in 2026, those ridings are ours.
You know, after the Liberals didn't do as well as they hoped in Milton the other day, we heard from Liberals who were hanging around the HQ, like at the riding party, that the number one problem that they faced wasn't Bonnie Crombie's popularity, it was Justin Trudeau's relative unpopularity. You could make a similar argument with you guys in the federal NDP. Jagmeet Singh is not doing well in the polls. The only one who really is Pierre Poilievre for the Conservatives. Do you sort of buy into this provincial politics mirrors the federal popularity and there's not a lot that the provincial politicians can do about it?
I think I would say it's really hard to break through with anybody right now. People's, I think, distrust that politicians can actually change their lives is at an all-time low. I see that every day. And so I think that for people who are paying attention a little bit, you know, it may be the big federal battle is what's on their minds. And that's certainly probably the next election that's coming for most people. So we definitely see the impact of that. I think it is true that the Liberal brand is very, very, very weak right now across this province. And I think that I'm sure that does rub off on them. But again, like for me and the NDP, the challenge isn't, can we overcome, you know, Pierre Poilievre's popularity? The challenge for me is, can we get people to understand and believe that politicians have the ability that what I do can actually help to make their lives better? And I think the only way to do that is to be consistently putting forward real solutions that are believable and achievable for people. But that is absolutely, I would say that is all of our challenges. And, you know, I think when we met last year, at the beginning of my leadership, we talked about this, I'm pretty sure, but that one of the reasons I ran was because of the low voter turnout. It was really the key reason. I find that as somebody who believes in the role of government and the ability to actually change people's lives this way, and make lives better, that's pretty depressing. And so I want to try to give people a reason to hope again. I want to move away from the negativity in politics, which I think has really turned so many people off. And certainly what's happening at the federal level is doing that. I like what Jagmeet's been doing in trying to use the leverage he has in a really unique moment to achieve something new for Canadians. It's historic. And I think in the end, I believe people will see that moment for what it was, like a historic achievement. But I think we all have the same challenge to make sure that people who are feeling really disillusioned and hurting right now believe that something could be better.
I think that's probably as good of a place as any to end it. Okay. So, Marit, thanks for the time.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.